You're listening to Engage with Andy Bush. To connect with the program today, please send an email to andrew.bush@comcast.net. That's andrew.bush@comcast.net. Now, back to this week's program.
Welcome back. I'm speaking with Craig Bouchard, who is the CEO and chairman of the board of Signature Holdings and chairman of the board at Campbell Inland. Let's talk about China, Russia, and your book on Caterpillar. But first, we talked a little bit about China in the beginning. It is truly extraordinary. It's hard for people to understand. I mean, when you look at some of these pictures of the smog and pollution that's in China, it's really hard to understand unless you've gone there. I was recently in Hong Kong, which is on the coast, right? And I woke up in the morning and I looked out across the bay and I was like, it's kind of misty out. No, it wasn't misty out. It was smog. And that's on the coast. So you can just imagine what it's like in Beijing, where you can't even see other buildings at times. It's truly extraordinary. I think this is an important thing.
You've got it exactly. And I was the managing director of a merchant bank in Beijing in 1990. And as long ago as that was, I traveled China extensively. I lived in Hong Kong for 2 years, and so I know exactly what you're referring to. In those years, the skies were clear. The culture was incredible. There were bicycles everywhere in China, on every street, in every town, very few cars. And the dramatic change to that is just not describable. There are no clear skies in Beijing, let alone other industrial cities, big cities in China.
Mm-hmm.
You can go for months and months without really seeing the sun in Beijing. And so that it seems incredible for us to think like that, but it's like that. And more importantly, the groundwater is polluted in 50% of the large cities in China. You've got basically an entire generation of human beings that's going to, perish a decade early because of those problems. And the government is just now really beginning to attack the issues. They got a long ways to go.
Yeah, I was fascinated. I was down at an energy conference giving a keynote down there last month, and I spoke to the CEO of Buckeye Energy, and he said, "Andy, you don't understand. In China, on the big coal factories, they have scrubbers on those smokestacks. They're just not turned on." and that gets to the heart of the regulatory issues with China. We complain about it here. Yes, there are definitely a lot of regulatory issues. There's a lot of problems with coal per se, and the pollution that creates. And yet, here's an example of a country that just says they're doing something, but they're truly not enforcing what's going on there, and they're reaping the terrible things that they're sowing there.
Well, it's going to be a tremendous cost to the economy of China, one that has not been properly calculated yet, and they're going to figure it out. But the human cost there is an economic cost as well, and it's going to be, something that's very dramatic. Our effort is simply to make a small dent in it by taking automobile vehicles off the road that are used for commercial purposes in the big cities. So think of a Kinko's truck going down the street here.
Sure.
So a commercial vehicle replacing electric power with carbon-burning, engines. And then doing the same for farmers in China, because the farmers are all, the grid was built in China for the benefit of the farmers originally. So all the farmers have access to electricity. Consumers in China, the normal people, don't have any place to plug in an electric car, so they're not a target for this kind of benefit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's 800 million farmers in China, and they're all capable of driving around a $1,000 electric vehicle on their farms instead of something that's putting carbon into the air. So these are the targets that we're after.
Yeah, that's great. Well, you brought up the economy a little bit. Does it concern you, or maybe raise concerns for you, about the Chinese attempt to slow down the economy, to squeeze out some of the credit issues and credit problems that they have there? Obviously, one of the biggest shifts we've seen in the financial markets is the first ever Chinese corporate default. How does that impact, how you do business in China, Craig?
It depends on, again, where you're at in the sectors there, but there is indeed a significant credit crunch occurring, going through the regional banks in China and up to the big eight banks.
Mm-hmm.
They've got loan portfolios that are on poor ground. They don't do good analysis in China behind loans. Still, personal relationships drive a lot of the funding, and local politics do as well. So they've figured out they got a weak banking system, and they're trying to get their balance sheets stronger, which means a credit crunch, and that's where they're at right now.
Yeah,
that's affecting the ability of companies in China to borrow money to grow their business, and that's why you're seeing, in essence, a failure to meet their targeted 7.5% growth. It's going to be significantly less than that for the next 12 months. So the government's got to stimulate, except the government's got this little problem we just talked about, which is the pollution problem.
Mm-hmm.
So they're having a tough time figuring out how to stimulate when industry needs to grow, but industry's polluting their environment. They're in a box.
Yeah.
And there aren't really clear answers to it right now. I think the Chinese economy is going to struggle for the next several years trying to solve these competing problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating to me. I mean, they're really trying to walk a fine line between squeezing out the credit issue without killing off the economy. And credit, obviously, has been a huge reason why China blew out of the recession back in 2008-2009, because they greatly expanded the amount of lending that went on in that country. I mean, very aggressive. They basically doubled the amount of commercial loans that were out there. Of course, the unique thing about China is that they can do that. They can tell their banks to lend, right? So, but that's got them in problems right now. And you wonder with the defaults and so on, you know, how that's going to handicap businesses moving forward. So I know it's in a challenging time.
More defaults. That's your answer.
Yeah, more defaults. You
know, industrial production right now in China as we speak is lower than it's been since 2009. That's a considerable period of time, and it's headed lower.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, maybe they can look at your book, Craig, on Caterpillar, and learn a few things about how to run a company. You know, what's interesting about your book, and I do want to switch gears here, obviously. You were initially asked by Caterpillar to explain how they went from, what was it, losing $1 million a day for 3 years in the 1980s to truly being, you know, a global dominant company in that industry. But I think what blew me away is the unprecedented and unfiltered access you guys got, you and your co-author Jim Koch, were given not only to the top executives, but also to their financials. That's truly unusual.
Yeah, I know. We were quite fortunate. The way that it started, Andy, was actually most people don't quite know. I took the, with Jim Koch, my co-author, took the model that I used for acquiring companies. It's a very well-defined, thick piece of analysis. And we studied 10 of the big global companies over a period of 30 years, trying to answer the question, which one was the best managed. Actually, Caterpillar won. So these are companies, you know, big ones, McDonald's, GE, you know, Goldman Sachs, Apple,
mm-hmm.
you know, big companies like this, although Apple wasn't around that long. And Caterpillar, hands down, won the contest, which had 25 variables being measured over this period.
Wow.
We were so surprised at that, we went and asked Cat if they'd let us in to tell the story. They actually said no first,
okay.
And eventually they changed their mind and said yes. So they gave us this by contract, unfiltered, unedited access to the company. It was an unbelievable opportunity for us, so we couldn't say no to that.
And that is amazing. So, I didn't realize that was the genesis of it.
Yeah, it was just such a fascinating thing. We wanted to tell the story of what great management for big companies is today versus 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Right.
A lot of great books that have been written. And Caterpillar just did some incredible things. So telling that story was a lot of fun. And we stayed on the New York Times bestseller list for 4 weeks. A reward like that is something that's a once-in-a-lifetime. So we were so happy with it.
No doubt. Well, let me just get into a couple of questions in a little bit of time. We've got a couple of minutes left here. They really had to shift gears. I mean, this is a great local story in Illinois, obviously, but they really had to go from, you know, being a loser to being a winner. They had to adopt a change attitude of, you know, change or die, essentially, right?
Yeah, what they did, Andy, is, you know, there's an elephant graveyard for big global companies. And it's at $20 billion of revenue historically. Lots of companies have gotten that big. And when you do, there's so many yo-yos around the world making decisions for your company, you tend to head south. And it's kind of boils a lot of things down to that. Caterpillar hit that ceiling and they stayed there for 5 years. Glenn Barton was their CEO then, and they made a number, five to six groundbreaking company-changing decisions to blow through the $20 billion of revenue. And of course they did. They went to 30, then 40, then 50, now almost 60. And those five decisions, each one of them could have cratered the company, and they went five for five. So it's a testament of incredible management, and that's what the book really tells the story of.
You know, how do you, and this is what's so much fun because of the insight that you guys had, you know, how did they develop this cult of team spirit and winning within the company? Because they had to change it, right? When we were losing $1 million a day, people are generally not feeling really good.
Well, it's called Bleed Yellow. There's a lot of lessons to be learned in there. One, they promoted internally to the people that performed well in their company, and they did that over generations. Most companies today have gotten away from that really simple concept.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they decided not to deal with customers themselves, and they built this dealership network around the world that handle all the customers. So it's actually a gigantic 56-plus billion-dollar revenue company that doesn't have any direct customers. The dealers have all the customers.
Wow.
And that was a miracle of a decision, the way they pull it off. It's a competitive barrier to entry for others to really get to their level. And then, of course, they defeated the United Auto Workers in the incredible battle that lasted 9 years. And so they have the best human resource set up. They're the best company in the world dealing with union issues. And so forth and so on. They were the absolute number one best company to implement Six Sigma,
mm-hmm.
which instead of doing division by division across the world, taking 3 years or 5 years, they did in 6 months, using 30,000 employees.
Oh, my gosh.
So these gigantic decisions and how they've been handled by the company are spectacular.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I think it is a great read. You do put a lot of wonderful insight, not only into that, but you also give a lot of the financials at the back end of the book, which I think for all the geeks out there like myself and other people who are, you know, I mean, seriously, in the financial services industry, anybody who's just learning to cover CAT or anybody who wants to read about this or maybe is in school, I have an intern that actually read your book because he was writing on Caterpillar. So, I mean, it cuts across all levels, and I think it's fantastic.
Yeah,
well,
you know, the bottom line for Caterpillar, and you would really appreciate this, is if you took the S&P 500 between January of 2001 and January of last year, 2013, it was up 12.5%, and in that time period, Caterpillar was up 448%. I think that's the bottom line.
I think that metric alone really means you should take a read of this book. All right, well, Craig, this has been too much fun. You know, thank you for your insights today, and please come back on with us to update on what's happening with all your companies, because it's not only fun to talk to you, but it really is helpful to get a good glimpse into what's going on in the world in the United States.
Andy, you're the best analyst on Wall Street. I'll come on anytime you ask me. Thanks very much.
All right, Craig, take care. Hey, when we get back, let's take a break. I'm Andy Bush, and this is Engage.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to twitter.com/Voice America TRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media. Can you keep up?
If you think you've seen online TV before, let us surprise you.
VoiceAmerica.tv is online now.
The leader in live internet talk radio has done it again. Multiple channels, a state-of-the-art viewing experience, live and on-demand programs streaming 24 hours a day. It's exactly what you want, when you want it.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
From health and wellness to business, sports, and everything in between. Discover our new world. Visit VoiceAmerica.tv now and experience the future of online television.
VoiceAmerica.tv.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.